Why don't we start? I know we have a couple of folks from Signal Akron here. Could you provide your names, please, and say hello? All right, we can come back. And just everyone else who's here, could you just introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name's Austin Rao. I'm a board member with Trail Advocates of Summit County. And I'm also a founding member of the Cuyahoga Falls Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Thanks, Austin. And Gert, I see you're on.
Thank you. Gert Wilms, new to Metro RTA.
Okay, thanks, Gert and Dave.
I wonder if Dave doesn't have a microphone.
Okay. And then two folks, I think, Sonora, you're from Signal Akron, is that correct? Yes, okay. Okay, well, welcome everybody. So the way we have this, we have a few short presentations for you on a couple of the things that we've been working on for this month, for our meetings. And so we'll go through those. And then after that, like kind of just open discussion. If you have any questions about anything, feel free, we can discuss whatever. I also should mention we have several of our staff here. Curtis Baker, he's our director. Jeff Gardner and Seth Bush, you probably know them. They're planners on our staff. Also introducing a new face. Some of you actually probably know him from his former role, but we just recently hired Matt Mullen as a planner on our staff. Matt comes to us from Metro RTA, where he was a grants and compliance specialist on their planning team for about 6 years. And so we're really happy to have him. This is his first CIC and what, your eighth day of work or something like that. So he's brand new. So with that, our first item on our agenda is to kind of go through. We just finished our annual crash report, so I'm gonna try to get this on the screen here, and gonna give just a brief presentation on that. I'll go through this fairly quickly, but certainly if you have questions either along the way or at the end, let me know. Because there's plenty more detail we can dig into, but I also don't want to bore everybody. So assuming you can see my screen, this, like I said, is something that we do each year. And so this report kind of follows the same format as before. Of course, there are new things with the report. The introductory section is very different, but generally, this is the way our plan is laid out. Those that have been to our meetings before know that Safe Streets for All was a major effort that we did at our office last year. And so now we kind of have our annual crash report, which we've done for years and years. We also have Safe Streets for All, so they're kind of two different ways of looking at safety. But just there's some differences in how we consider crashes, the timeline of our data that we're using, and how we score projects. So the big difference being how crashes are considered. Safe Streets for All is purely focused on our most intense crashes, our serious injury and fatal crashes, whereas the annual crash report takes into account all crashes. And so one of the things we looked at on our report was an overlap between, which segments or intersections on our high crash list also were noted on our Safe Street for All high injury network. And there actually wasn't a whole lot of overlap, a little bit less than I would have expected, but it just goes to show that there are very different ways of looking at safety, depending on the severity of crashes you look at and all sorts of other factors. So some of the big picture data or trends we have seen a small decrease in our fatalities, whereas our serious injuries are staying pretty much constant. Both our fatalities are up fairly significantly from before the pandemic. So that's kind of troubling, but they did at least go down a little bit this year. Our total crashes are trending downward slowly. We kind of had our low point during the first year of the pandemic. They've gone up since then, but modestly. And then our bicycle and pedestrian crashes kind of are following that same trajectory. They went down in 2020 and now they've gone back up, but they're still below where they were, say, a decade ago. And I was mentioning this at our TAC meeting today. Like, I really have to believe that when you look at the bicycle related crashes line, you know, they're fairly significantly below where they were a decade ago, but we also have a much more expanded network of bicycle lanes, shared use paths, trails. So I have to believe that because we have more bicycle amenities, that has helped in the grand scheme of things. Our process can be found in section two of the report. It's a pretty lengthy process. Our engineer on staff kind of leads that effort. Seth does a lot of work on that too. But it, you know, pretty time intensive process to go through all 47,000 crashes. That's quite a bit. They're broken into roadway sections and then intersections. And so with this crash report, to be included on the list, you have to have at least 30% of your crashes having some level of injury or worse. And then what we're looking at is basically nine crashes within the 3 year period, three per year on average of either roadways or intersections. Then we rank the locations, the composite score of our total crashes, and then our percent of injury and fatal crashes. So lower number is worse. And so the results of this study of our crash list. So looking at our very top high crash sections for this report. Our number one and our number two were also at the top of the list last year. So those have not changed, which is interesting. Our number three project, which is MLK, kind of on the northern edge of downtown Akron, that was number one in 2018. So that's kind of all three of these are high crash sections that have been hanging out near the top of the list for a few years. Here's just a map showing our top 50 high crash sections, kind of spread throughout the region, but generally tend to be higher volume roadways, more of them in Akron and the nearby suburbs, a few out in Kent and Ravenna, but not very many out in the rural areas. When we look at intersections, our top crash location was north of the city of Ravenna, out in Ravenna Township at 14 and 44. That was also a high-rated crash or crash intersection last year. I think it was number two. Another one that was number one last year is now number three, and that's Route 18, heading out toward Medina, at Medina Line Road on Route 18. And then one that's kind of jumped quite a bit on our list. It always, or the last couple of years, it has been in the top 50, but now it's kind of surprisingly number two. In the National Park section of Cuyahoga Falls, we have Riverview and Ira Road. And then here's a map showing our top 50. Those are a little bit more geographically spread out than the crashes. You start to see them more in rural areas. Looking at bicycle and pedestrian crashes, we kind of see a continuation of the trends that if you've participated in CIC before, you've probably heard us talk about some of these trends before. So, first of all, very likely to result in an injury. That's not too surprising, but around 90% for either bicycles or pedestrians. We have If you add these together, you know, 27 of our fatal crash, 27 of our fatal crashes were either bicycles or pedestrians. That's a pretty high percentage of the total number. So don't have the exact number in front of me, but let's average you know, a little south of 70 per year. So a little over 200 fatal crashes, 24 of those are pedestrian or bicycle, or 27 are bicycle or pedestrian fatalities. And then we see a lot of seasonal spikes with both bike and pedestrian crashes. That was something that we really looked at with Safe Streets for All. And those trends sure did hold true when we did this latest crash report. Once again, October was absolutely our highest month for pedestrian crashes. And this stuff is all outlined in section three of our report. So if you want to just really look at the bicycle and pedestrian specifically, you'll find some of those findings in there. And then just a couple other things to finish on. Bicycle crashes within the MMETS area spread throughout the region, but obviously much higher in those communities where you have more bicycling and higher densities of population. City of Akron and the other inner ring suburbs, also going out into Kent and Ravenna, those older communities that have a more dense land use. Pedestrian crashes kind of follow the same format. They're much higher in those core communities. So that's, in a nutshell, our crash report. But, you know, and hopefully you've had a chance to look at that. I know it's the draft report's up on our website. If you have any questions about right now, I'd be happy to answer them. And if you have any questions down the line, I'd, you know, certainly reach out to us. So any questions on this? Okay.
Well, one question I had, I think the number two intersection was it Riverview Road and Ira Road? And it looks like that was the towpath trail that was kind of, yes. It crosses on the west side of Riverview Road. I wonder how much that plays into, if at all, the crashes at that intersection. Because I've seen several close calls right there.
I wonder that too. And I wonder, I kind of actually want to, somebody mentioned that at the TAC meeting today, and it kind of made me want to just look at the exact crashes and the circumstances, but I also wonder, at the very least, I think that there's a lot visually going on there, because a vehicle driving is out of necessity having to pay attention to the pretty busy section of the towpath there. There are two crossings within 50 feet of that intersection. So there's a lot going on there. Plus you have the railroad crossing, you know, there's an at-grade rail crossing there. So there's a lot going on. Plus you have a four-way intersection with two-way stop control. I think a lot of times when you have like the two directions of vehicles that are stopped at a four or at a two-way stop, and there's always that question, like a lot of people don't know who goes first and stuff. So it's just a lot going on there.
So, yeah, and I'd also be curious about the time of year. I imagine in the summertime, that when there's more visitors in the national park, more people using the towpath, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a higher rate in the warmer months.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit either. And I would assume that just Riverview Road and Ira Road are both much busier during the summer months too. Like, so you have more traffic, you know, there's definitely more going on then. Any other questions?
Do I get to mute? Oh God.
We can hear you, Dave.
Oh, you can hear me. All right. Yeah. Sorry, I'm complaining here. I didn't know I wasn't already muted. Grade crossing accidents and any breakout on roundabouts.
So interesting that you mentioned about roundabouts. It's actually something that AMATS is working on right now. We even had a discussion about it today. We hope within the next few months, maybe even at the next CIC meeting, to talk about that report. So we have started looking into the safety analysis of like before and after roundabouts are built and getting a sense of how crashes have declined or changed, and the severity of those crashes, how they've changed too. So stay tuned on that. At grade crossings, no, we've not done like a comprehensive safety analysis of, you know, what we're seeing at our at grade crashes. However, we do have the ability to like look at any site specific issue. We certainly, like for Riverview and Ira, we could pull up the data to kind of see what specifically we're seeing there and if the tracks there was a contributing factor to anything.
Okay. And then I just want to note to the those attending in AMATS, I'm not sure if you're aware, the railroad implemented on January 2nd, the two remaining crossings in Hudson, the at-grade crate crossings, now have what we call a whistle restriction, where the locomotive engineer do not sound the horn with the exception of in an emergency or with maintenance away workers present. Also, just today at the ORDC meeting, Ohio Rail Development Commission in Columbus, if I understood correctly, ORDC provided the matching money for the local match to get the Hinds Hill overpass constructed sometime in the future.
I wasn't aware. I knew about go ahead, Dave. Say again.
Curtis or somebody, you could look into that, exactly what money was awarded. The town Hudson city manager was made the presentation, and he would have all the details. They've been working on it for more than a decade, and looks like they're finally making it happen. And the good thing is they already own city-owned property is where the bridge can be constructed, and the existing road can remain open while the new bridge is constructed. Norfolk Southern has a bad habit of parking trains waiting to get through what we call a control point at a place called Twin, and that's what causes the bottleneck, which delays emergency responders and such. So it'll be a good safety enhancement to get that grade crossing removed.
Yeah, great to hear. I wasn't aware of the bridge, so that's actually really interesting. So, okay.
That's all I have for now. Thanks for the info on roundabouts and grade crossings.
Yeah, thanks for your info, Dave.
To my knowledge, in all of last year, we had no fatalities on the railroad, did we? In the AMATS area?
I don't remember seeing anything, so I don't think so.
I think that's accurate. I know we had some in the last couple of years, but I don't think we had one within 2023.
That's what I'm thinking, is usually I hear about those when they happen. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. So the other presentation we have, and again, this will be a pretty short one. Let me throw this up. So what we wanted to do, and I believe this was discussed at kind of a high level at our December meeting, but we're a little bit further along in having our decisions made for where our funding is going to go. We had a funding round last fall with several sources of the money that we dole out. And we've gone through a process with our committees to rank those projects and decide which ones get funding. So wanted to share with you what the recommended plan is. Our policy committee will make the final decision on this next Thursday. We had our technical advisory committee vote on this also, and they were on board. But let me just kind of run through that. So basically, we had our committee that kind of really gets into the weeds with funding meet back in December based on staff recommendations on how projects scored through our scoring criteria. What we decided made sense with the money we have available is to award projects as you see here. Now, one thing that we are not going to be awarding in January is our STBG funding, which is kind of our biggest pot of funding. That's going to be in March. And the reason for that is we had an issue with like there were some questions about some of the projects and it would have potentially upset the order that had been recommended. So we actually had a meeting about that today and think we have it all sorted out. But the short version of the story is it'll be in March when those final selections are made. But I'll walk you through our other sources of funding. So the first source is kind of a new one to AMATS. It's called the Carbon Reduction Program. It's a federal source of money. We have about $8 million into program. And basically, this source of money should go toward projects that will reduce emissions. And in our case, all of the projects that were recommended to receive funding were roundabout projects. Two of them were kind of bigger projects that had other improvements also, but roundabouts were part of them, and two of them were purely roundabout projects, but kind of spread around our whole area. All four of them came in right around $2 million, but you can see them here. And so that's the plan for our CRP money. Resurfacing, that's actually kind of a subset of our STBG pot of money that we have. The way we program it at AMATS is we put about half of our STBG money into a resurfacing pot to go toward simpler projects where you're just resurfacing a roadway. So we received, and actually let me back up a second. We received a record number of applications this year. I think it was 118. The typical round might have 50, 60 funding requests. So everyone was very hungry this time. So we unfortunately had to say no to a lot of good projects. But with resurfacing, fortunately, we were able to fund about half of our requests, as you can see here. And so those 20 projects total $15.3 million, which is what we have available. The transportation alternative set aside, some of you are familiar with that source of funding. A lot of times what that is used toward is funding our trail projects. It can also go toward just anything that is improving non-vehicular modes of transportation. So public transit projects, pedestrian bike projects, so sidewalks, streetscape type things, transit amenities along corridors, things like that. So we had a lot of people apply for this funding this time, 23 applications, but we only had $2.3 million available. So our list of projects we're able to fund broke down to these three. So the first of which is the Headwaters Trail. So that's in northern Portage County. Right now it's kind of in the Garrettsville to Manaway area. This would extend it westward toward Aurora. The city of Aurora and Portage Parks District are working on some other phases, and they actually have funding pretty much all the way to Aurora. The ultimate plan is to have that connect to some trails up in Solon. So this is a big piece toward one of the big missing pieces of getting this done. So we're excited about that. And then making some pedestrian improvements on the Stowe Street Bridge in the city of Kent. That's Portage County's project. The Portage Trail goes right through there. So this is kind of like an amenity to have easier access to and from that trail. And then the last of that money, if approved next week, would go toward the Rubber City Heritage Trail. That's a new trail in the city of Akron that connects all the four legacy tire companies within the city of Akron. The first phase is already being built right now down near the Goodyear facility. This would kind of extend it. This is in the vicinity of the Middlebury section of Akron. So again, only $2.3 million, unfortunately, that we have, but we were able to get three good projects with that. And then finally, we have a source of money. So we want our TASA to be flexible in case any projects slip. If we have projects that are funded, but they're not able to get done, it's often hard to deliver projects like this. We wanted to have kind of like a back pocket plan B. So if funding becomes available, we could give it to other projects. So we had a list of several projects that if that happens, we would provide this funding to these projects in this order. At this time, we don't have any funding to give toward these projects, but this is just kind of a plan B contingency list. And so, you know, I don't really need to go through next steps because you guys aren't the project applicants necessarily, but basically just saying like what the next steps for our communities or agencies would be that receive the funding. So are there any questions about our projects and why certain things were selected or what's not on there or anything like that?
One comment and then a quick question. So my comment is I was glad to see that there was funding available for three CASA projects. I noticed on that slide, it seemed the Rubber City Heritage Trail was awarded, was it $1.1 million?
Correct.
Is that correct? I thought the maximum was now $1 million.
Yeah, totally right, Austin.
I think the reason it says that, and we didn't put our coworker put together this, but I think that's including what we call the PDIP, which is the Project Delivery Incentive Program, which you can get an additional 10% paid. And so I think Rubber City actually committed saying, well, we can get this done in 2 years, and therefore we're showing it as $1.1 million because that include it's basically like funded at 90% versus 80%. So the 80% would have been $1 million.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they'll actually hit it, but we appreciate them trying to be aggressive and deliver the project in 2 years. So
Austin, you said you also had a comment, right? Or did we?
My comment was just I was glad to see three.
Oh, yeah. You said that already.
Funded. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So our last thing, just a short item, and actually we're gonna give that to new Matt here, and let him jump in and tell you a little bit about what's going on with our active transportation plan. It's kind of a thing that Heather's been working on behind the scenes over the last few months, and now with Matt on board, he's going to be working on that too. So he's going to give us a short update on that.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Excited to be here. Sorry for the additional Matt now on the AMAT staff. We'll have to come up with a nickname. We've been kicking a couple around, so I don't know. Stay tuned on that. But yeah, work is underway to update the Active Transportation Plan, or ATP. Last updated in 2018, the ATP is a key input document for the upcoming AMAT's long-range plan. The ATP will provide a current outlook of what we define as our active transportation network, what we define as our goals, and present various strategies and recommendations to improve our bike and pedestrian networks. The plan attempts to refine these networks with regards to connectivity and safety while promoting active living, sound economic development, and sustainability throughout the region. So we're currently in the draft stage, as well as receiving recommendation requests for future projects so that information can be added to this plan. We are asking our members to review the map so we can capture all existing and planned shared use paths and bike lanes. Also included in the plan will be a map of our existing bus stop network as Metro changed their routes in June of last year. Our current time frame right now, current public time frame, look for an interactive map around March for public review of the shared use and bike lanes, and maybe what you would like to see that's not already on the map, or maybe something that we've missed. We also plan on discussing the ATP and public recommendations during the March CIC as well, so you'll still have time for review to add any comments at the next CIC meeting. And then we plan for final draft in May and wrap up final comments and present the plan in June. That's kind of our ATP update as of now. Anybody have any questions about that?
Matt, just for clarification, will there be an opportunity for the public to, I guess, provide ideas on what may be included in the plan? You mentioned a map, and you said that would be available in March. Is that all correct? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Or
Yeah. You, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So the Seth has been working on a web. So I guess backing way up. So we, if you're familiar with our 2019 plan, we had a map of existing shared use paths, bike lanes. We also have our list of like aspirational things that, you know, our communities and agencies and the public would like to see. That all has been incorporated into a web application. We also are in the process. Well, we also added some other things. Seth designed something a few months ago that where communities were able to add anything that has been built since or that was missed before. So that's going to be sent out to them. We're asking them to kind of review all of that on an individual level in their communities and then provide any other ideas they have. Once that's all compiled, then yeah, that'll be going directly out to the public. We'll be talking about that at the March meeting. So March is going to kind of be the key time frame for like someone like you, Austin, that's interested in bicycling in your community, will be looking for other ideas. And then of course, you know, if we have other ideas, things that aren't on the map or whatever, we'll run those by the relevant communities to make sure that, you know, they're aware and like, hey, do you think this is a good idea? Is this something you might be worth or wanting to pursue? That kind of thing.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So we should have something more exciting to react to in March, I think. Okay. Well, you know, that's it for our agenda, but do any of you have anything you want to share or any questions you have about anything else going on in the office?
I made my comment to the chat. Everyone, I think, knows being a railroad guy, I think the best use of an abandoned railroad is as an electrified battery electric rail corridor when the freight traffic allows.
I'm just catching up on that, Dave. I didn't see your battery electric. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. We've, you know, we typically hear of, you know, it, I guess it depends if we have, are you talking like abandoned rail corridors or you're saying existing rail corridors? Like where we have like our class one railroads, like our.
The abandoned rail corridors should have never been abandoned and picked up. There's still the existing corridor between Cuyahoga Falls and Hudson. And it's hoped that perhaps a service could be provided on that at some time in the future.
Okay, yeah.
Keep up the economic competitiveness of the Cuyahoga Falls Industrial Park there. We formerly called that the Allside Spur.
Okay.
And we've now lost the line. I think that's mostly in... they picked up the rails between Aurora and Stolen, and that's what they're building now. There was a plastics facility there in Aurora. They are now landlocked to receive truck traffic only, and that's, I guess, the main focus of my comment.
Okay, good to know. Now, is this, I would assume this is probably the same corridor I was talking about when I mentioned the Headwaters Trail. And their the eventual plans to continue a bike ped trail. I assume that would be the same rail corridor you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they call it, the Headwaters Trail.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know the details, but I know that I've heard recently that the city of Solon, I think they have some existing trails, and then they have plans to use that corridor to extend it southward. Basically to the, you know, to the Portage County line. And then I know that the Portage County Parks District has been doing a lot to build a bike hike trail on that corridor up to eventually the Geauga County line. I know those sections up in Aurora It's much more of a long-term goal. I know that currently there are some property owners that, you know, are against that and stuff. So we shall see. I mean, but to your point, you know, if that were to be a future like rail corridor, that's kind of where we're talking about.
Well, that's my reference, considering we started our conversation today on highway traffic safety and serious accidents, injuries and deaths. Forever now and in the future, suburban Aurora and Solon residents will have to drive where they want to go other than a bus option. There is no opportunity for a light rail transit or commuter rail service into city center for Guardian games, other sports games, work, etc. That was one of the last commuter rail corridors outside of the big cities in North America when it ended, I believe, in January of 1977. The tragedy, we should have preserved that.
Okay. Yeah. And I know that the other corridor you spoke of, like the Hudson to Cuyahoga Falls, that's now the Veterans Trail, which we actually have funding for a bike hike trail there. That had a lot of commuter traffic back in the day.
Will that have a option to preserve the rail as a rail with trails?
That's not part of the proposal right now, but as for like the possibility of that happening in the future, I guess I don't know.
Well, I would think we need to talk to the people in Cuyahoga Falls about forever locking their large industrial park into truck-only transportation if they'd like to participate in the global marketplace, and with rising fuel and uncertainty in the Persian Gulf and the Panama Canal moving petroleum products, might be a good idea to use efficient rail transportation services. I am not in any way opposed to recreational trails, and as long as the speed is slow, I do support rails with trails.
Yeah, and I know there are some examples. Typically, at least with a lot of the Class 1 railroads, they could be pretty squirrely about the idea of sharing a corridor for obvious reasons. But I know that there are examples where they do coexist side by side. Even within our region, I can think of at least one example. So I know it's a possibility. Yeah, and I guess I don't know, like, the. So much is up in the air. Much of that corridor is owned by Metro right now. They are going through a process to divest that. But, you know, I don't know what kind of lease agreements might be worked out in the future so that there's that possibility, should the need arise or the desire to have to reconvert that as an existing rail once again. I suppose that's a possibility.
I would like this, my comments and this discussion to be included in the narrative to the policy committee next week.
Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure this gets captured within the minutes.
Thank you.
I'm not an expert on this, but I've heard of the concept of rail banking, where abandoned rails, rail lines can be, preserved and converted for like trail use or something, but the right of way is maintained such that if in the future it's deemed necessary or advantageous, it can be converted back to rail. And I believe that the Akron Secondary Line that we're talking about was rail banked back in the 90s, although I'm not 100% certain about that.
I am also not certain about that. I'd like to investigate that farther. I have looked at it at the Surface Transportation Board. I don't think the rail line has ever formally been abandoned, so there may still be a common carrier obligation for Norfolk Southern to provide freight service, and I think AMATS Akron Metro would need to review that they don't get into any trouble formally abandoning that line. If it's truly just out of service, as I believe it is, and that it has not formerly been abandoned. Except for grade crossings, the rails and ties are still there.
So I can speak a little bit about Metro and the rail. So the Kent line actually is preserved under that. If the need were to arise in the area, the surrounding municipalities and I guess Metro could put it back into passenger use. But I mean, like, if you look at the Kent, the trail out to Kent, I mean, there's no rail anymore. And then as for the secondary, I don't know what the abandoned term, you know, like what is considered abandoned or not, but I mean, there's a lot of missing, rail parts. I mean, actually Metro just, in December at their last board meeting, approved, a company to look at the rail, to appraise the rail lines. And so that process is just starting.
Liquidated salvage value, I believe that's called. Yeah, I'm not sure of the status. The 3R and 4R acts specifically address the issue of line abandonments. And if time permits, or maybe someone at AMATS could investigate the Surface Transportation Board, has that rail line ever formally been abandoned? If not, it's my understanding rail should not be removed, thus breaking the common carrier obligation before formal abandonment proceedings and hearings are all held. To my knowledge, neither rail line has been abandoned, and I believe a correction. Significant portions of the rail between grade crossings still does exist between Akron, beyond Akron Junction, actually down towards Market Street, all the way to Kent, the Portage County border, do still exist. The line, to my knowledge, has never been abandoned. This also should be brought up about the Erie-Lackawanna line at the policy meeting for discussion.
Just jotting down some notes. Yeah, thanks for that background.
Any questions? Curtis, I believe, has my contact. I'm currently on temporary assignment in West Virginia, but I would be able to respond by email or text if you had any particular railroad questions.
Great. I appreciate it. Any other questions from the group?
I did have one question, and it relates to a question that I had at the last CIC meeting in December, and that's regarding the TASA funding for the Veterans Trail projects for those two sections that are already funded. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Curtis, you said something along the lines of that funding would be held until, I guess, all hope was lost for building a trail there.
Yes, we will hold that funding. We are making preparations for, possible slippage into out years, and there's no, I think we would hold it until all hope is expired completely.
Okay. I was just considering one possible scenario. I know maybe it was 2 years ago, First Energy had expressed some interest in building a transmission line along that right of way. When Metro divests the right of way, if First Energy would purchase that or I guess gain ownership of that in some way, given that transmission lines and trails there are many examples of those existing on the same right of ways. Would that necessarily preclude TASA funding from being used from constructing a trail?
No, we even had heard some discussions about this with First Energy folks. The only thing that we were aware of is that, because transmission lines aren't incredibly popular either, you know, I think the reality is First Energy would probably pay to put the trail in completely because they can use it as access road. And, you know, very similar to, I think, what's done up, you know, in North and Twinsburg and that area. So I don't think it would, you know, either our money would go towards that, or if First Energy was taking on the bulk of it, if they were committed to doing that, you know, I don't see how that hurts anything. My only, you know, concern about that path forward is just, you know, from what I've heard, there aren't a lot of people excited about a transmission line either.
Sure. I had when they were giving those public presentations on that proposal, I spoke with someone there. I can't remember. I think he used to work for AMATS, actually.
Yeah, Scott Humphreys.
That's the gentleman. He mentioned that they would need to build an access road, but I think it would be a gravel access road. So I guess the trail would still need to be paved, and I'm not...
Yeah, and if that was the case and the right-of-way was there and they said we could do it, we would do it. You know, we would move forward with it. I don't think we wouldn't get in the way of that.
Okay. Yeah, that's the only question I had. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we thank everybody for joining us. I don't know, Matt, if you have anything else you want to close with.
Nope, I think I'm good. Thanks everyone for taking the time though.
Yeah, we appreciate your time and you know, hope to see you at the next CIC.
All right, good night, everyone.
Yep. Have a good night. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.